And you're still in the moment on SDPB Radio. We're just switching gears a bit to tech radio. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. For the next hour, we'll talk tech, the latest, news going on in the world. And we'd love to take your questions. In the moment at sdpb.org is the email address for us. And our phone number, 800-524-3604. If you'd like to be on live, 800-524-3604. We certainly encourage that. And as well, if you'd just as soon hop on Twitter and send us a short note, Kent SDPB is the Twitter handle. And go ahead and feel free to do that. We've got the guests today on the line. Lemonly's John T. Meyer is here from Sioux Falls. Hello, John.
Hey, Kent. How you doing today?
Great having you back.
Yeah, I know. I've been gone for a while and been traveling a little bit and just trying to stay away from the winter cold, and now I'm back because spring is here in Sioux Falls.
Well, thanks for bringing it outside. That's wonderful. What have you learned in your travels?
I've been more like we've been out visiting some clients and talking to. We actually were in Pier, which isn't that very. That wasn't too balmy or great weather, but for the tourism conference, which was great. That was my first time ever attending the South Dakota Tourism Conference. A lot of awesome people to meet there, and I just love the camaraderie that people have out there. They realize that we're all in this together to bring folks to South Dakota and kind of explore the different corners of our great state.
Yeah, it's a focused goal. Were you dispensing knowledge or soaking it up and networking? Or
yeah, more the second one this time, learning. So it was great.
Cool. Very nice. Also on the line, speaking of peer, Jeff Litterick from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello.
And it's balmy in Pier today as well?
Yeah, it's been nice all week, but even with all these temps, the snow is finally just starting to disappear. So we had quite a bit here, and it's I'm glad to see it finally starting to get gone. So
yeah, and of course, you know, it's not going to get messy until state wrestling starts next week, of course. End of the week. It's supposed to maybe rain or snow later in the week, but we'll, public broadcasting will be all locked in there at the Sanford Premier Center in Sioux Falls. We're going to hunker down for a couple of days of streaming wrestling. And so if you can't make it to the event, we'd love to see you. But if you can't make it, we'll have eight live web streams going for all eight mats, and that'll be fun. So, yeah, we're getting ready for that. But, yeah, folks, enjoy the weather this weekend. Certainly in the holiday on Monday will be a great time to do that. John T. Meyer, there has been a ton of Facebook and Snapchat and other things that we should probably catch up on. Where do you want to start?
Let's see. We had talked a little bit in our emails of the week that Snapchat is getting ready to IPO here shortly. So there's talk of a March IPO, which will be a big deal for, of course, for them, but even for the whole tech kind of social media world. It's been a little while since we had, you know, a company in that space IPO, especially one as big and prominent as Snapchat. So a lot of people are going to be really keeping tabs on how that goes after the IPO, how that stock performs. Lots of times you see a big jump and kind of shoot up the charts, and then sometimes a little bit of eager excitement and it kind of drops back down. So I think people will really be keeping eyes on that. I've heard some rumors of valuations around $22 billion. I know that Evan Spiegel, the I think 26-year-old, I think, co-founder and CEO of Snapchat, who is already quite wealthy, will quickly be very, very wealthy.
Of course. Are they? You laughed at me when I said this in the email, but you know, getting ready for that post Twitter world, because everybody's been saying for so long now, you know, Twitter's going to end, Twitter's going to die, and this is going to be, you know. It's going downhill. They don't know how to make money. How are they going to sustain and things like that? Is Snapchat poised to pick up the pieces if that happens, do you think?
Well, I just think they're so different. And so One part that I think maybe prompted your email is Twitter did have their quarterly earnings, I think, this past week. And it came in again for several quarters in a row below expectations. And so the stock price took a pretty big hit. And it's just been more and more bad news for Twitter. You have some of the top executives leaving. Stock is underperforming. They just seem like they can't really decide who they are and what they want to be. So the product changes, they move buttons around. And unfortunately for some of the core users, someone like myself, who over all the years, Twitter's probably always been my favorite and still is, they just kind of lack identity. And so to me, Snapchat is a very different platform and a very different demographic, especially if you look at the users. I think there's probably a lot of teenagers who maybe aren't even on Twitter and use Snapchat. So are they going to pick up the pieces? You know, I don't know. I think there is a finite, you know, is it a zero-sum game? There's maybe probably a finite amount of social media networks we can all use, I hope so, and how many we need to check and post and look at. So in a way, yes, but they may not be necessarily competing for the same person.
I got to tell you, probably since just before the election and maybe some post-election, I've been picking Twitter up more. And that sounds weird because I normally try to shy away from those that are slinging mud or, you know, just negative news all the time. But even during the Grammys, I found getting the phone out and just, you know, it was discussion points for the other folks sitting around watching. Hey, this is what these people are saying, or can you believe that? Or, you know, it was there's so many other opinions. So it was refreshing to have those other opinions.
Well, what was interesting about that quarterly earnings, and it has been a consistent trend for Twitter for years, is they just don't know how to monetize the platform, because for the select users that do use the platform, they are incredibly engaged. And we just went through a run of, and are still in a run of, great events. So you had the election in the fall, had the Super Bowl, the Grammys, you're going to have the Oscars come through. Twitter is amazing. I think the best when it comes to live events that we all participate in. Kind of that second screen. So in the digital world, as you can go there for commentary, you can go there for humor. I thought Twitter was amazing during the Super Bowl.
I didn't catch that, but I guess I was too busy finding some cheese dip or something. But I missed.
And that's why I think I laughed at your email, because I mean, there's a lot of reasons to say like that are we headed to a post Twitter world. But I also sit here in the studio in Sioux Falls, and we have CNN on the screen, and you know, they have tweets coming by, or guest speakers are on the show and they have their Twitter accounts next to them. And so it's so ingrained too in our culture and a part of media. And even, you know, we talk about events, but like it or not, the president has probably been a good thing for Twitter, because it has become his platform of choice. And there's a lot of debate on Twitter and urging Jack Dorsey, the CEO, to even try to take the Twitter account away from Trump. But however you feel about that, I just think Twitter is so ingrained in our culture. And maybe ultimately what it means is somebody comes along and will buy the company and hopefully find a way to turn a profit, or at least just kind of build it into their existing company.
I see sponsored tweets in my timeline. Are businesses just not buying it? Are they not getting any, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, if I'm Joe Taco Salesman and I get a sponsored tweet, I need to sell some tacos.
Yep,
is there just not the response in those ads, so people aren't buying them, or what do you think is the problem there?
Yeah, and I think, you know, Facebook has done a great job of being incredibly targeted and using the data that they have on all of us as users to so brands can speak to almost exactly who they want to talk to. As you talk about, you've seen sponsored tweets, but if I asked you to recall one or remember one or think of one that you actually clicked on and maybe like went to the website or engaged with, you might be hard pressed to do so. And so I think we as users we're smart, right? We have good BS radars, and we know how to skim right past tweets, and we go look at the people we want to look at, and we know the people who we follow. So they just haven't been able to connect the dollars to the people, to the eyeballs.
Well, it helps if it helps me remember, and it helps me to scan past it, because it's a dating app that, you know, that wants me to click through, and I'm
exactly the case,
happily,
right?
Happily married, so, yes.
For several years, and so that's an example of someone paid dollars for that, and they totally did not get in front of the right person. And whereas in Facebook, I could say, I don't want to talk to anybody who is married because I'm a dating app. So they're missing the market.
Did you see the rumor? It was probably about a week and a half ago. Maybe it was more on 2 weeks ago, about possibly Facebook buying Twitter.
I might have missed that one, but it's not surprising. And I think in a lot of ways, I would trust Zuck to actually figure it out and to figure out how to put it as a part of their puzzle.
Well, he's been in the news.
He has, yeah. I didn't read his whole letter yet, but he kind of came out with like a...
It's a treatise. It's like 6,000 words.
A little bit of a manifesto, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, his answer is, you know, to, I guess, strife or I don't know how you want to put the embroiling controversy that's going on right now on Facebook and fake news and all the, you know, the embattlements and things. But the answer is more Facebook. And I guess more control of it and more, you know, and building a better community. He's focusing on building a better community. And
yeah, I mean, I think he believes, and I don't, you know, here's the fine line of if this is his job as being CEO or truly believes that, you know, Facebook can make the world better. I just typed his name in quick to my phone as we were talking about him. This Atlantic article is titled, "The Mark Zuckerberg Manifesto is a Blueprint for Destroying Journalism." So being here on South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I don't know what I'll have to dig into that article and see what that's all about.
One of the interesting things I found about that letter was actually the news story that he actually deleted part of a couple of sentences out of that letter right after setting up because they set out a pre-release to the press. And then when he posted it about 30 minutes later, he actually went back and removed a couple of sentences out dealing with AI and his vision of AI being able to automatically find terrorists and sort of correlations in the future. It was if you read the original, it's kind of almost Skynet type kind of like thing. So he's already actually had to modify it just slightly already. So
yeah, you know, certainly if you watched the press conference yesterday, it was on about noon about this time. There was certainly a large, boy, how do I want to put this? How do I want to phrase this? There was a bunch of talking to and about the press going on, and I learned a lot, I guess, in that hour, maybe a little bit longer than an hour, about perceptions and what people, I'm throwing the president in the same bucket here, how they view the press, I guess, or journalism, and I see it a different way, and it seems like there are other opinions about, you know, just because it's on a quote news channel during the day, that's not necessarily news. That's a lot of people's opinions sitting around a desk or sitting around a couch or whatever. But when I listen to what I hear from the BBC and I listen to NPR and I watch the NewsHour on PBS, there's definitely a difference, and that's what I think is going to get stronger. I guess the people are going to go back to the basics and double check the facts like we're always supposed to do and things like that. I don't think that's going to stop, and I hope that the new Facebook or what Zuck's vision of that in the future will just tie in with more sources that are less fake. Or less very fake, as they say yesterday. But well,
the stat here in the Atlantic says one analyst told the New York Times last year that 85% of all online advertising is funneled to either Facebook or Google, leaving a paltry 15% for all news organizations to fight over. So money talks, right? And so that's obviously where things are headed. Mobile ads for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The way we get our content, the way we get our news is changing. But yeah, I still think there's something to be said, and hopefully Zuckerberg can take upon this responsibility and not just be concerned about making money, which he obviously is primarily probably concerned about,
sure.
But some idea of this like media literacy, and I think this is something that I could even see beginning to take place in our classrooms and schools across America, even at a young age. I mean, technology is not going away. We have a week or a bi-weekly show about tech radio, right?
Mm-hmm.
On how to use it. And it used to be how to fix your printer and connect that. And it's changed because it's so embedded into our lifestyle today. But we also need to know how to use it and the right way to use it. And, you know, my 14-month-old daughter can grab an iPad, you know, even when I maybe don't even want her to have it, and seems like she already knows how to use it. And so we can't hide it from it, but I do think there's something to be said for learning how to lean into it and do so the right way.
Well, and we've been learning here how to more effectively use Facebook as a business and get our, you know, they're really getting into video. I don't know if you've noticed, or you've had to have noticed, all the they've just sort of opened up the floodgates to
who's they?
Facebook.
Okay.
To accepting more live, and giving more prominence, getting videos that you post in front of more eyeballs, versus any other post. And we've been kind of rolling with that here, and it's met some success. And yesterday I saw that there's going to be on different devices on Apple TV and on some others. I didn't see Roku in there, but I saw some Google Play. There'll be kind of this Facebook channel now, and you can watch the videos that are posted to Facebook. So They're really moving into the video era, and so if other news organizations pick up on that, and many others, I'm not going to limit the scope just to journalism and news, but if everybody else sort of realizes where this is going, gets in on it early, it's going to be an advantage, I think.
So. Yeah, video. Yeah, we could probably do a whole segment about video, and like go find some of my stats, but yeah, that's definitely where a lot of content is headed. We're even trying to recognize that at Lemonly. You know, we have a lot of designers making what we call static things, meaning JPEG, PDF things that don't move. And we've really already seen in the last 12 to 15 months for both the client's request and the things that we're tinkering with ourselves to start to move. So animation and live video. And we're just trying to tell stories using visuals, and the visual part is the part that's changing and evolving.
Yeah, we had a social media post with an embedded video prior to the gymnastics tournament last week, and it was about gymnasts in South Dakota, and then just bang, like overnight, you know, 40 some thousand views, and the reach was amazing. And it's hard to do that without video now, we're finding.
Sure.
So, yep. So that, you know, it was a great piece of work too. It was a wonderful piece, but man, it really seems the winds are behind your sails if you've got a good video out there on Facebook. You just had an infographic on Facebook, didn't you, at Lemonly? Eight out of ten people that are online are Facebook users.
Yeah, we put a little piece out, just a quick stat. Yep, today, 8 out of 10 Americans now use Facebook.
Okay.
Yep. And so, from grandma to grandpa, it used to be like weird when mom and dad joined Facebook. We're long past that point. So now it's grandma and grandpa. It's almost everybody.
Yeah, and they're working on the next version, I guess, or Zuck is, and that'll be exciting to see what happens there. And if people expand their circles or make them tighter, and how they use it in their lives, it'll be a fun ride, I think. And we do need to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got lots more to talk about, and we'll do that after this quick break. And we're in the moment on SDPB Radio, Tech Radio right now. Speaking of Facebook, facebook.com/techradio, where to go if you would like to interface with the show a little bit. You're probably already on Facebook right now. So type in a /techradio, pop on over there. It was Clean Your Computer Out Day the other day, Jeff, and I posted a little article on the Tech Radio page that showed a guy taking a PC outside and blowing it out with a can of air, and it was there was some amazing things coming out of there.
Like
no,
that's
blow it out, and he might as well have blown it up. I don't know, but John, do you even have a PC? I mean, a tower type computer, or are
no, it's been a long time since I've been. I mean, I took my first laptop. I got a MacBook in 2004 when I went to college. Yeah, I haven't had a tower since then.
But I know Jeff does.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Jeff, do you take your towers outside and hose them out every now and then?
Hose them out.
Actually, dope, because I tend to invest in good cases, and what I mean by that is the top end gaming cases, the higher end cases, all have pretty good filtration systems nowadays, filters on both air input and a lot more airflow, so dust stuff. I clean it. I take it apart maybe using the same case over and over again for different builds, maybe about once every 2 years is when it gets bad, when there's a layer of dust in there. But the filters, the screens and stuff, I actually have to clean out monthly because they get filled up pretty fast with dust and stuff. So, but I have high airflow and those filters, and so a lot of dust doesn't really settle. But in a normal work environment, office environment, yeah, those towers get bad and they get fast. Doesn't take very long because they have very slow airflow. A lot of them sit on floors and stuff, so anything like someone vacuuming picks all that stuff up, puts it in the air, and then it gets sucked right on in there. So, and it does make a humongous improvement on temperature, especially on your hard drives and CPU, to keep those heat sinks and metal surfaces clean so that they can transfer the heat out. So, yeah, I highly recommend it. I would look probably at least once every 6 months to a year and just see how it is. And once there's a good layer, go out and blow it all out.
So. How do you recommend they do that? That just is it as simple as just unhooking everything, taking it outside, unscrewing the cover and blowing it out with a can of air?
Yeah, for the most part. Of course, you want to power everything down. Depending on where it sits, sometimes you don't need to take it out. It depends how bad it is and stuff. Because whatever you blow out, of course, is going to be in a pile around it when you're done. So you have to think about that. But, yeah, just pop the side case off. Use a can of air with a nozzle on it so that you can kind of direct it into those corners and recesses, especially where the hard drives are at. Make sure you get a thorough clean all the way through the nooks and crannies. It doesn't take very long. You would talk a couple minutes. Make sure you get all the fans. Make sure the fans turn. That's where most of the dust will collect, and that actually reduces a lot of airflow through the cases. And one thing I'll mention, this is not just for desktops. Laptops get notoriously bad heat management over their life because unless you clean out their heat sinks. And, yes, they do have airflow and fans. They're very small, little slots and stuff. But if you blow air through those and look up online, there's for different models, they show you how to do it. You'd be surprised at how much junk comes flying out of a laptop and how much better and cleaner the laptop runs after you do that, especially if you're doing heavy video work because of the graphics cards and stuff. People have seen, 5-6 degrees Celsius drop immediately after just blowing out a laptop. So it's just not for desktops. It's for anything that has a fan in it that is pulling air through and through the system. You really do need to clean it out.
Oh, I tell you, you'd be surprised how much cat hair you can get out of a laptop if you've had to clean that. I'm serious. I'm totally serious. Have you ever done that, Jeff? Have you ever cleaned out a laptop from a pet owner?
Not from a pet owner, but even at work ones, you clean out, and it's just like, in fact, in some cases, worse than a desktop because it's all concentrated clouds just being blown out the back.
Yeah, it seems to cake in there more and collect in huger clumps, I guess. But yeah, I'll tell you, especially if you're a pet owner, and your laptop is around that animal quite often, and they shed quite a bit. You'd be surprised what you can get out of there. And you're right. If you notice overheating problems, you notice maybe a strange noise coming out of your case because the fans aren't working quite the way they should. Blow them out and check it out because that's it'll make a huge impact. So Jeff, what's your opinion then? Apple's fighting the right to repair. Have you heard this?
Yes, and this is one of those issues that has lots of sides and stuff. And there's probably multiple issues at work for Apple. First of all, never underestimate how much Apple makes in refurbishing and fixing devices. So there is a greed thing that if everyone's allowed to fix stuff, then everyone can get third-party parts and like screens and batteries and just go in and replace stuff, and then Apple loses their total control,
mm-hmm.
And a profit margin that they do. Now, remember, the bad part, though, is anyone can go in and change stuff, and who knows what they do, and then they call up Apple and say, all my stuff's broken. And they go, well, that's because half the internals have been replaced by non-Apple parts. We can't help you. And that kind of, those problems that crop up. And also, most, you know, a lot of the, especially the Apple stuff that people want right to repair on it, and a lot of it's laptops, which are, you know, much easier to repair, is, you know, phones and tablets and stuff. And Apple and the consumers want smaller, lighter phones and tablets, you know, especially thinner. And the more thin they make, the less repair you can just do. I mean, in fact, most of the stuff you send back to Apple, if it's not a screen, they just throw it away and give you a new one, and transfer all your data stuff over, because it's not worth the effort to repair, because everything's so miniaturized in it, right? So, and then to open, even allow opening the case on it required is, you know, they can actually, if you didn't need to open the case, it could actually even make it smaller, right? So there's a ton of side issues, and I can see a lot of their issues. I don't really get them on the laptop, because it gets into a lot of, we just charge us normal prices to fix laptops, and we make a lot of money off that kind of stuff. I mean, when you go in and you go, they replace the screen for $150 that costs them $20 to replace, you got to wonder, right? So, mm-hmm. So there's a lot of side facts. I can see both sides of the issue, and I think it really depends on the device. The problem is, if you enforce it and make Apple, then they can't always make all the products they want to make in the way they make them, in the form factors they make them, because they wouldn't be repairable. And then, you know, everyone's not happy. So
sure,
there has to be some give and take on all sides, I think.
John, you're a huge Apple consumer. You got any opinion on that?
I don't. Actually,
That's fine.
I don't know.
I mean, you just sort of, just, if I'm buying this product, I'm just going to take it back and get it fixed by them. And you're okay with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's right. There's a huge market. I found, like a lot of material things in my life, which, whether it be, you know, computer or a jacket, I like making the investment, hoping that it'll last longer. I think one thing, and if Joel were here, he would have probably data on this, but they hold their value really well. So I even just took a 2012 iMac down the street over to Mac. Let's see, which one was it? Mac Doctors. I was pretty surprised that my almost 5-year-old computer, they gave me $600. I traded it in, and so probably, like as Jeff's saying, because they can still make money on it too. But they really do hold their value over time too.
That's a good point, and we'll follow that. I think the case is... go ahead.
We might just want to roll back real quick. We never really explained what's going on with right to repair, and just a quick little summary. Mm-hmm. There's some legislation that was introduced at the federal level that would force companies, and not just Apple, but all companies, to allow their devices to be repaired by their owners. You own the device. If it breaks, you can go to the manufacturer. You can go someplace else to get it fixed. It basically, like the automotive industry, it unlocks it so that you don't have to go to a dealer to have your car fixed, right? In the same case, you wouldn't need to go to Apple to have your computer fixed and stuff. So that's what that legislation is all about, and it's introduced at the federal level. It was just introduced. Apple's fighting it. Some companies are for it, and we'll just have to see how it goes.
Yeah, we'll follow that for sure, and let folks know on the show. And if you've got an opinion about that, let us know as well in the moment at sdpb.org if you'd care to. John, before you have to take off, you wanted to talk a little bit about your new earbuds.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. That's why I thought maybe you were going to send it to me. You talked about Apple products, but
yeah.
I did recently, that last about a week ago, I got and received in the mail the new Apple AirPods, which are their cordless Bluetooth headphones.
Mm-hmm.
And they look just like the AirBuds, if you think of the white that you see on the ads that have been around forever.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have the cords. And that seems really minor, but I've heard some people talk about, and this is almost silly, kind of thinking since Apple has come, but it being one of the best products they put out in the last several years. I really like them. All the annoyance of like connecting Bluetooth devices, you just, I don't even know how it works. Jeff could probably explain it, but you just put them in your ear and they immediately connect. And so I've been walking around, and if someone stops me on the street, you take them out and they disconnect your podcast or your audiobook or your music just stops playing. You put them back on and then it goes. It's been really impressive. And the worst part for me, I got to do better at this again. I haven't done it for a while, but when I run, the ones with the cords used to always fall out because that cord would jingle around and kind of fall out. You're always putting the pods back in your ear. But with or the buds, but these AirPods, they don't fall out. And so I've really liked them, and I wasn't sure if Joel were here. I'm sure he's probably already has them. He probably got them on the first day. But if anybody or listeners have used them, I would recommend.
They've got a unique feature when you store them. That's the charging mode, right?
Yeah, put it's like this little capsule that you can hold. You flip them open, and they kind of magnetically drop in, and they charge them, and then you'd have to charge. I haven't quite figured out the length of that yet. I've just been plugging it in a little bit at night for a bit, so I haven't quite determined how long I can go before charging them, but I'll report back on that.
Are they seal your ears up at all? I mean, are they kind of noise canceling at all, or are they just like the other earphones?
Pretty much just like, yeah. Mm-hmm. If you're a person who likes the kind of the over ear that you might be for work or either on an airplane, they're not going to certainly do that where you block out all sound and really feel like you're, you know, in a cave or something. I felt like the usability and just kind of the portability were really great, and I've really enjoyed them. Certainly, of course, for the type, I'm not a big like audiophile. I'm sure for folks who are way into the different sound and the different balance you get from your music, I'm guessing they're probably not off the charts for something like that. But for me on the go, making calls, listening to podcasts, going for a run, I've really enjoyed them.
Absolutely. And I'm going to just throw in, I don't have the Apple version, but I do have some Bluetooth headphones. They are connected with a cable, I mean, to each other. So they're not totally independent like yours are, but on that little tether there's a volume control, and that's where the battery is and other things, so it lasts a long time. But mine are the in the ear, and so I got them because I'm quite often in, like I will be next week, in a large sporting arena with a lot of screaming people for many hours, and if I need to take calls, I can take calls. But the big thing is, you know, you mentioned running and jiggling cords. When I snowblow or I do something outside or I'm mowing or whatever, I used to rip that cord out of my ears, and that's just frustrating. And this is this moving on to Bluetooth headphones was one of the better things that I've done, and it's not a huge cost thing.
Yeah, and maybe that's it. If you're a long user of Bluetooth headphones, for me, just finally cutting that cord and going to this, like, it just seemed, it's kind of like, why haven't I done this before? And so I just thought that the AirPods were a good product that kind of fit my needs. But
well, I appreciate you bringing that to the show today. It's they're a newer product, and it will probably make a lot of folks' lives easier. And certainly, like I said, there are other brands. I know Beats has them out, and there are certainly cheaper alternatives. But a good thing to look at if you're frustrated by that cord dangling and ripping those headphones out of your ears or them jiggling loose after a while. You can take care of that, and it's a fairly easy thing to do. We have to step away for a moment. When we come back, we've got more news to talk about. We're going to talk about some Russian hackers and VR headsets and other things. We'll delve into maybe some cell carriers and all their Rush to Unlimited as well in the final segment of In the Moment Tech Radio. And we're back in the moment on this beautiful spring-like day. We just heard the promo for the winter photography contest. Well, you're going to have to get creative. The contest is going on right now. You've got through Monday to shoot, through the holiday, and then through the 26th to post them. Send them my way. You've got a whole week to edit. But that winter contest, Jeff, is going to take the back seat to some spring-like conditions here for the next week. So no excuses not to grab your camera this weekend and get out and try to make some of that $2,000 in prize money, I guess. Whether or not you got a DSLR or you're going to use your cell phone, doesn't matter. If you're a pro or you want to go in the youth category or you're a hobbyist amateur, we've got three different categories, so you're competing against your peers for that cash. So totally encourage everyone to go out and grab your camera this weekend or on the holiday on Monday and shoot some South Dakota and send it our way. We'd love to see what you've got, and we'll, of course, do some awards, and you'll be a part of the calendar for 2018 from SDPB and the Friends of SDPB. So I want to actually promote that a little bit on the show today, as well as our coverage that's coming up this week of the state wrestling tournament coming up. We've definitely got eight mats of fun Friday and Saturday, And, of course, on TV, we'll go live for the championships in high definition on Saturday night. You'll get to see the A and B champions go at it live at the same time from the Denny Sanford Premier Center in Sioux Falls. And we're looking forward to bringing that to you again for another year in preparation for that. So I want to encourage folks to do that. But right now, we're in the moment. If you'd like to get a hold of us, in the moment at sdpb.org is our email address. You can shoot us a text. It's 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372. Or if you'd rather just talk to us, our phone number, 800-524-3604, 800-524-3604. Don't be shy. Send your questions to us in the moment at sdpb.org. Jeff, I have a lot of things I want to talk to you about. I heard that there was a Patch Tuesday in February that just postponed indefinitely. And now, that's not all Patch Tuesdays. That was that just one?
The patches will actually come out next month. So it wasn't that the patches were indefinite. It just they didn't come out. As most people should be aware, because we harp on this enough, every second Tuesday, I had to think about that, of the month, Microsoft releases a patch. Then Adobe and other companies have been kind of syncing in with that to release all their patches on the same day. Microsoft actually pulled this month's set of patches for all their systems that they patch at the last second. Something occurred in the patch that was very bad, probably would have crashed a lot of machines. So they pulled them. They will be reissued in the normal March patch day. So next month, we should have even a bigger patch to download and apply. So they weren't postponed indefinitely, but these were held back to fix probably a very bad issue before they got released. So this is the first time that's ever happened in the years Microsoft's been doing this. They pulled individual patches occasionally, but they haven't pulled everything before. So it might be a symptom of their new patching scheme where for most security fixes, they deploy one patch instead of individual patches to fix the different security issues, and they had to pull the entire thing. But so far, I'm not hearing of anything too bad being exploited that might have been leaked out that was fixed, but it's still not fixed because they weren't released. So I think everything's good. We'll just have to wait until next month to kind of see what really was wrong.
So. Does that have you concerned at all? I mean, it seems really odd.
It's odd, but I'd rather them do it right than half the world's Windows computers no longer boot up. That's kind of the downside. These patches now, especially with Windows 10 auto patching and stuff, go out so fast and so quick that it doesn't take much to make a mess. And Microsoft, we haven't talked about it too much, has actually made a mess, especially with the Windows 10 updates, not so much the security patches, but other updates, where they've been breaking a lot of USB devices, machines no longer booting up, just from simple monthly patches. Video cameras no longer working was a major one with their anniversary update. There's been almost like every month there's been some little issue that a lot of machines have been affected and broken just by the normal patch update. So Microsoft's gotten a black eye recently, and they may be a little bit more shy. But as long as no one knows and no one is exploiting the security vulnerabilities they patched, we should be good. It won't be indefinite. It's just 1 month. But I'd rather them do that than have a serious issue where, everyone's machine is broken and they're trying to figure out ways not to update anymore because the machine broke from the last update. And that makes stuff even worse. So
yeah, and throwing this back to the wrestling terms, 1 point, not two. So if you got to let the guy up, let him up. Don't let him get a reversal and get 2 points on you. Is the point? So if you got to let one go to save some headaches on the Microsoft side, that's cool, I guess. Hey, another Microsoft news, Jeff. This one snuck up on me. The gaming franchise Forza, the car game, right? On
yep,
with Microsoft.
The Ford Forza, which is Xbox.
Yeah, topped 1 billion in sales. That's one of the few, I guess there's four or five of them that have done that for Microsoft. But have you played this game?
I played it a long time ago. One of the reasons that helps it make a billion, like some of the other franchises like Call of Duty and stuff, is it's been out forever. They come out with about one a year, ever since the original Xbox came out. And I played it. I even got a steering wheel for my PlayStation Xbox back in the day, too, because I was kind of big into driving games for a while. And play it, and it's a really, I wouldn't say it's a super sim, but it was very competitive with Gran Turismo and some of the other ones that was on the PlayStation were very sim, very popular. And it's exclusive to Xbox over the years, but it's been a very popular, very well thought of series. So yes, it doesn't surprise me that it's surpassed a billion after all this time. I'm surprised it passed it sooner, but it is a driving game.
Cool. Hey, one more Microsoft thing in the news. They finally released to everyone the premium email service from Outlook.com. In the past, it's been a kind of a trial thing, and you can get in on it for, I think it was like $4 a month or something like that. So it's the Outlook.com email, but now they've added the ability to have a custom domain name for up to 5 addresses, and it's $20 a year. No ads. That's a pretty good deal for a small business or just a few folks in the family or something, isn't it? And I'm asking a person that's in enterprise because I know you know how much it costs to run an email server.
For a small business stuff, the problem is Gmail's been already doing that for 8-9 years already.
Okay.
You can do your own domain. You can pay for the premium stuff, and it's like $5 a user. So, at least that's what it was when I was using it heavily. I've kind of just gone back to the non-special domain one version, just the general one. But it's something that other people have been offering for a very long time. Microsoft has. It depends. If you like Outlook, it's probably good. If you don't like Outlook, there's other alternatives that are just as good and offer the same features for around the same price and a little bit less. So, It really depends on your flavor. Outlook it can be a very acquired taste, depending on, like I said, a lot of people use it at work, so they're very comfortable with it. But it's not the only game in town, and hasn't been for a very long time. So.
All right. Well, we'll have to maybe talk about some of the alternatives on future shows. I'll get a hold of you about that. I want to jump back into gaming real quick before the end of the show. There was an article, the developer Valve, has been working on a virtual reality headset. And virtual reality in Steam, that's the platform that many gamers use to download their games and play their games. VR has been up and coming, I would say. It hasn't been really blowing the doors off anybody quite yet.
Well, the hardware, the Oculus, especially for the PC type, which is mainly what Steam is, it's been expensive. It just really, starting to gain a little bit of traction. First-gen models came out last year for actual production use. And there's a few games that are really good, take really good advantage of it. But it's something like market penetration. And a good example, and Valve is saying they're okay with it either succeeding or not succeeding. And I kind of liken this to 3D TVs. Go back 5 years. 3D, you had to have a 3D TV. Today, you can't buy a TV with 3D. In fact, the last manufacturer that makes 3D TVs just announced they are no longer going to make a 3D TV. It bombed that badly. Going forward, you'd be hard-pressed to find a 3D TV. And there's been 3D kind of stuff before VR for PCs and gaming, and all of it has failed. Oculus is the first real hope, but until there's enough market share and millions of people are buying this so that people can do big games just for this and there's enough of a market to be able to sell a game for there, it's kind of iffy. I'm hoping it succeeds. There's a lot of benefits to VR. It's getting better every day, but in the end, people are going to have to buy the headsets and the VR gear in order to make it work, and that's a question still to be answered if people will pay for that.
So is it a technology waiting for the killer app? Is that what it's doing?
There's some killer apps out there right now. The problem is, are you willing to pay $800, $900 to run a single killer app.
No.
You know, these are, in fact, more than a full console in some cases, depending on the quality you want, right? So the technology has made lots of leaps and stuff, but until it scales down from mass where, it, you know, it's a price point that makes a lot of sense, and you're starting to see, you know, on the consoles, VR coming out and stuff like that, and that's probably where it will really take off first because they can mass produce this stuff and make it at a cheaper technology level. And you're seeing some for cell phones and stuff like that, especially doing special, you know, cardboard boxes. Google had these cardboard boxes you'd turn in and you'd put it on a Google phone and it would give you a fake-type VR experience. And they seem to be popular if you can get the price point down. Once the price point is down, people seem to like it and enjoy it, but it's all about the dollars in the end. Are you willing to spend that much? And in the business world, there are already some killer apps and stuff, but businesses are willing to spend, you know, $1,000, $1,200 on a specialized piece of gear for one app, for like architectural design and for image spacing and design and stuff like that. Is the home consumer for a couple of games?
It seems like maybe some people jumped the gun a little bit and expected sales to just go bananas on VR right off the bat, and it hasn't happened, and so maybe some folks are pulling back a little bit. I think it's great that they've decided that, hey, you know, we're going to take the risk, and it's okay if this fails, because I think they know it's going to eventually take.
A good example is I play an MMO called EVE Online. They came out with a killer VR app called where you fly a spaceship in first person view, kind of like Wing Commander, but you, as you move your head around, it's all first person in a VR environment. Really fabulous game. But still, and I think, so, you know, there's some really good games out there, but I think everyone really expected when Oculus came out to be a different price point, about $300 less than it is.
Oh my.
And it came out much higher than even what I think a lot of the early adapters were expecting. If you think about it, there's a lot of computing power to make VR work, especially at high resolution. Most of the VR in the past, and why it failed back in, because we've had VR for a long time, in the 80s and 90s, is the screens and resolution really sucked and gave people headaches because you just couldn't do a full resolution on two TVs and actually make frame rates work. Now you can, but it's still kind of expensive. If they can scale it down in pricing, I think they have a hit. But like I said, it's all going to we'll see if they can survive long enough to get that mass appeal and the price down to garner mass sales.
Yeah, and I've been excited to read about some breakthroughs they've made in accessibility for folks using that technology. But again, that's not mass market. But it's exciting to watch, and we'll continue to keep tabs on that. Jeff Litterick from BIT, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate you taking the time out of your day and spending it with us. Thanks so much. That is all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank my panelists today, Lemonly's John T. Meyer, and from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre, Jeff Litterick. I want to remind you, SDPB is there for you with our app or at sdpb.org. Go there and click on listen. Have a great weekend, everybody.